It is 8 p.m. and you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio. This is Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tonight, we're very pleased to have with us in the station and in the studio all of the students of the BCIT Cooperative and Community Development class. And their teacher, Tracy Cleish, is here. This is the second time we've hosted the class here at Co-op Radio. They're getting a chance to check out the station and to learn a little bit about one of the, you know, older co-ops here in Vancouver. So we're going to have a few members of the class join us in the latter half of the show, Kim, James, Monica, and Esther. And we'll also talk with their teacher, Tracy Cleish. She is also the general manager of CCEC Credit Union, friend of the show. First, as usual, we will have the news with Paul McDonald. You want to take it away there, Paul?
Thanks, Robin. Van City Credit Union has released a report that says, and if you have a news or event item, please email us at media@eachforall.coop. And back to you, Robin.
Thanks, Paul. We're going to take a short musical break here. This is Feist with Past in Present. And we'll be right back here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. And we're back here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Over the last year or so, we've been covering quite a few stories about youth engagement. And tonight's continuing on that theme, one of the top 10 things from the University of Saskatchewan's top 10 co-op issues, number 4 came out as youth engagement and keeping youth engaged in the cooperative movement to really create those leaders of tomorrow to have a healthy co-op movement that continues on. One of the people who is on the ground doing that is Tracy Cleish. She is the teacher of cooperatives and community economic development at BCIT. She's also the general manager of CCEC Credit Union on Commercial Drive, the self-described radical activist credit union. She has 12 years of experience working with Van City in both operations and community investment. And she also sits on many boards as chair and president of the Sea to Sky Community Services Society and the Squamish Montessori Society. She lives here in Squamish and commutes down to Commercial Drive every day. She's also a graduate of the St. Mary's University, master's in management of cooperatives and credit unions. And in her spare time, she is the mother of three. Thank you for joining me tonight, Tracy.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for having me again. And I'm excited to have the class here to talk with you and hopefully to connect with some of your listeners and get folks excited about co-ops.
Well, I'm really excited, too. It's really fantastic to just fill this whole space that we have. And we last year were in our Wall Street location and it was really tight, but it feels nice and roomy and much more professional to have everybody join us here in our station in the downtown east side. When we are talking about youth engagement, what are some of the things that you're hearing from your youthful counterparts about connecting with the co-op movement? Because I kind of feel, the University of Saskatchewan has talked to all these cooperators around Canada, and it's come up as like the fourth most important issue is continuing to keep youth engaged in the co-op movement. What are you finding is effective in doing that?
Well, I think it's an important issue, and I think, as you mentioned, these are potential co-op leaders for tomorrow, and co-op members are getting older, so it's kind of critical, it's vital that we engage a new generation of folks in this way of doing business. And in my experience, I've taught this course, this is the sixth time I've taught it, and a lot of the students definitely would fit in the youth demographic. it's just that they haven't had an opportunity to hear what this is before, really, usually, than taking my course. Or they may have, you know, shopped at MEC before, or, you know, one food co-op somewhere in their family history. But my experience tells me, with now over probably 120 students, that once you start talking about this, it's hard not to like it. And people are excited and inspired by a different way of doing business, but really that they just haven't had the opportunity, even going through post-secondary education, have never heard about a co-op before. So I feel that we need to get the word out there, and we need to get more people just understanding what a cooperative is.
Yeah, it does shock me how often you hear of people who have gone through a business course or business courses at post-secondary and have never heard of co-ops. And it's mind-blowing. I know, so some of the programs we've done in the past year on Each for All have been the Yes Camp. We had them on. So that's a group of... essentially, it's a summer camp for, but co-op focused. And then also the BC Co-op Association has a co-ops in schools program now. Mm-hmm. And that one's an interesting one to connect. What they're doing there is they're connecting with university students and connecting with high schoolers as well. Within the university setting, in something like BCIT, how does one get a cooperative course into the curriculum?
I think I was just really fortunate by a good turn of events. I've been drinking co-op Kool-Aid for a long time, and you know, it's definitely been something that has come together in my professional life and my private life. And I was approached probably about 5 years ago, at about this time actually, that the Sustainable Business Leadership Program was looking to incorporate a course on cooperatives. So this is a program that students go through for about 8 months of the year as a cohort. It had been running for a few years at that time, but there was an interest to add a cooperative as kind of a lens for sustainability. So I thought it was a wonderful offer, and so I obviously accepted it and wrote a curriculum for a 15-week course that's kind of a co-ops 101. But I do feel that because this is not a subject that a lot of people go to school and learn about, that, you know, my students, by the end of the course, know more about co-ops than probably most people do. But it's still this kind of high-level, general co-op understanding. But they go, you know, kind of all over the model and around the world in 15 weeks.
That's pretty awesome. And so you yourself did do a degree in cooperatives at St. Mary's University. What was that like? What made it specific cooperative? Like, what's cooperative management different than other business management?
It's kind of like, yeah, I mean, it was wonderful. It was long. It was a long commitment, almost 4 years that it took me to do it. It's like an anti-MBA is the best way to put it. So we would do all of the subjects that you would cover in a normal MBA program, but do everything through a cooperative lens. So what traditional business might teach you, you might do the exact opposite, because you are part of a cooperative. You're member owned and led, you know, in this democratic environment. So it's really looking at whether it's finance, strategy, innovation, human resources, but everything through a cooperative angle. And that program has been going on for more than a decade now through St. Mary's University. And it's actually a cooperative, an education cooperative that started the program, looked for a university to host it, and St. Mary's obliged. So it found a home there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that story. And so now you're the general manager of CCEC Credit Union. Was your goal to seek a management position in a credit union?
Well, I don't think I ever started out with that intention, but I worked at VanCity for a long time and had amazing, wonderful benefits. And it was through experiences at VanCity that really got me tuned into the cooperative movement and made me want to pursue this degree and spend 4 years doing it and, you know, meet so many wonderful people. Through my studies and through teaching this course, I got to know a lot about CCEC, which is, you know, this amazing little credit union that not a lot of people know about because, you know, it is kind of small and rather funky and is not in the mainstream. So I had been a friend of CCEC, I think, for quite some time and gotten to know my predecessor, Ross Gentleman, pretty well. So when I heard he was retiring, I thought it might be a good fit for me. And that's been about, I think, 16 or 17 months now. And I love it. And I went from, you know, probably one of the biggest credit unions in Canada to definitely one of the smaller ones in the province. But I love the, I love being part of a small community where you're really connected with the 4,000 members that we serve. I feel in a really special and unique way. It certainly has a lot of challenges, but it's a very rewarding role.
Well, it is a very unique credit union. As I said at the top of the show, you know, it's a self-described radical activist credit union. I'm going to try and remember the name now. The Community Congress for Economic Change.
Yeah, you got it.
CCEC. Really interesting place to find yourself. What are some of the progressive things going on at CCEC? Because I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, this is a very unique place, and it is a community. Really, in that community of Commercial Drive, it has been there. It's a staple for a long time. And are you still feeling like you're maintaining that radical activist's role?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the way, you know, that is what attracts the board of CCEC to be, you know, a financial cooperative that can remove barriers for people where they would traditionally have them placed in front of them. Mm. You know, I think the progressive thing that we're doing is kind of doing what we've always done. And for us, what might seem radical for another financial institution is really just the way we look into our members is much more than numbers on a credit score, but it's their stories. And, you know, I've had some pretty amazing moments where it really is just around offering what would be considered really small loans to people and how life-changing that is. I was just talking with somebody last week, and it was about, do you really think you can make impact when you're so small? And I think our impact is by each member, but it's how that ripples out across community. And I think that that's pretty profound at CCEC. So we do all kinds of, you know, emergency loans so people don't have to go to a predatory lender, but they're able to pay their bills and get groceries, to looking at financing co-ops for worker co-op share loans, for supporting sectors that other banks and credit unions might shy away from. So I'm proud of what we do. And I think our members definitely make a choice to choose CCEC as opposed to, you know, a larger financial institution with more bells and whistles. But I think it's because they believe in the cause.
We had Ross on, Ross Gentleman, your predecessor, on last week, actually talking about amalgamations of credit unions. So the statistic that he had was in 1991, there were 101 credit unions in British Columbia, and today there are 42. Mm-hmm. How does CCEC not bow to that pressure to basically...
Yep, to merge.
You know, yeah, jump in with the big guys.
You know, well, I think we don't bow to the pressure because the board and the members want to stay fiercely autonomous and independent as a small credit union. And that's something I really respect and part of what attracted me to CCEC. But I can tell you the environment in which we operate and the regulatory burden in which we operate, that's a harsh reality. I think is what drives a lot of these mergers to happen. So it will be the challenge will not go away. I think it will continue and become even greater. But this could be an opportunity for smaller credit unions to work together in a unique way that maybe we haven't done before, not necessarily as a merger or any type of acquisition, but how can we cooperate more and remain autonomous and independent. But in the credit union system in Canada, that's BC. I can tell you across Canada, I think there was 11 or 1200 in the early 90s, and we're down to just over 300 now. Wow. So this is very much a trend, and it's a decision to remain autonomous, but it does take an awful lot of work.
Well, I'm sure your leadership is going to keep that fire burning there. I do want to focus back to our class, and I feel like I could talk about credit union stuff with you forever. But so your students are going to join us shortly, and we're going to find out what's going on with the class and how they ended up there. The program I think most of them are taking is in sustainable business leadership. So it'd be interesting to hear from them how cooperatives are going to influence their goals. Some of the questions they had for you were, do they get extra credit for going in the air?
That wouldn't be very cooperative, because there's only 4 out of 19.
Okay. So. And they also wanted to know who your favorite student was.
Oh, that's a tough question.
Okay.
I have to abstain.
You know, just love them all equally?
I do.
Okay. Thank you so much for bringing them down here once again, and for letting us share Co-op Radio's story and letting your students share theirs. Really, yeah. Very pleased to have them all back here. We're going to take a little station identification break, and we'll get your students in here. We'll be right back on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. You're, of course, listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio.
You are listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
These days, commercial media is focused on profits, not people. Each for All reports a bit differently. We cover the cooperative business sector. Co-ops are democratically owned and controlled businesses, created when people with shared values come together to provide needed products and services. We encourage businesses built on the values of honesty, caring, hard work, family, and community. These are businesses that make a difference in the communities our listeners and volunteers work and live in. Tune in to Each for All Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on Vancouver's own Co-op Radio.
Start your week off the Aloha way, listening to Hawaiian music every Monday from 10:30 to noon, right here on Co-op Radio. Aloha Monday. All Hawaiian music, all the time. That's Mondays from 10:30 to noon, right here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Aloha Monday. Aloha.
This is Eli Smith from the Downhill Strugglers, and you're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO, 100.5 FM. Community radio, live and local since 1975.
Give me that.
It's mine.
I want it.
No, it's mine.
No, give it to me.
You have to give it back.
Stop. Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
Vancouver's Global Village of Radio. Here on Vancouver's only cooperative radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
And we're back here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. I'm very pleased to have with us in the studio the students of Tracy's class here. The class is Cooperative and Community Development, and I've got Kim, James, Monica, and Esther. And I was going to get you to sit in that order, but I totally screwed that up. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us here on the air. Now, you guys are in a program that is the Sustainable Business Leadership program at BCIT, and it's the advanced certificate, I've heard. pretty interesting. So maybe, do you mind telling us what this Sustainable Business Leadership Program is all about? Kim, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So the program covers a lot of different aspects of sustainability in the business world. We're learning about cooperatives, we're taking an accounting course, learning about socially responsible investing and triple bottom line economics. So it's not just about profit, it's also about the planet and the people. And we're doing a year-long capstone class together with our cohort so we can all learn how to work together as a group just to try to make a difference in the world.
So why did you choose sustainability as a focus for your learning?
For life.
For life, yeah.
I have a bit of a different background than the other people here. I quit my job working in telecommunications to go back to school. I just graduated from BCIT in May with my diploma in business IT management. I took a class with Mark Giltrow, the program head in my program, and just found him super inspiring, and he talked up the program and talked about how business doesn't need just to be about making profits. You can use this knowledge for good and to make a difference in the world, and that just really appealed to me.
That's pretty awesome. I'm actually going to ask the question of you as well, Esther. So I'm very curious why people are choosing to take a leadership program in sustainable business.
Well, that's a really good question. you know, my main reason is that I just really wanted to be equipped with some practical tools to be able to make a difference. So I feel like at the bottom of our hearts, all of us are good people, but it's very hard to differentiate how and in what ways to go and how to make a difference in the world. So that was my main reason. I just wanted some hands-on tools.
Cool. And are you getting those out of the program?
Yeah, I think so. So far, it's been really interesting. Just, you know, learning about co-ops alone has been a huge change in my worldview. So, yeah.
And what was the journey that brought you here? Because we just heard from Kim that she, you know, was working, quit, came to this BCIT program, and for yourself?
My background, I used to teach for a while, and then I stopped doing that, and now I'm working for Lululemon. I work in customer service, and I'm really interested in how big companies such as Lululemon, for example, could and should make a difference in the world. And I think sustainability, you know, should be the main focus for companies. They have a lot of power. We talked a lot about this today, for example, in class, actually. Mm-hmm. I want to see what we can do.
Interesting. And so it's interesting to hear you all come from different backgrounds. James, do you want to speak to how you ended up in the Sustainable Business Leadership Program?
Absolutely. So my background and my educational background is I have a diploma in global studies from Capilano University. And that was a great program. It was called the Global Stewardship Program. And it set me up with a lot of good ethics and principles and an understanding of how the world works and how there are different power structures that cause various inequalities throughout the globe. However, it did not provide me with any real practical skills to change that. And so the reason I joined the BCIT program was because when I look at the world, I, in my opinion, business is what has changed things the most. You know, a company like Apple, for example, has literally changed everybody's worldview and how people live their lives. And I think that if that type of power was harnessed by somebody with the ethics and morals that go behind the environmental and social justice movements, you could really, really, really make a big, significant, long-lasting impact.
Awesome.
For the positive.
Yeah. And Monica, you as well, what brought you to the Sustainability Leadership Program?
Well, this one in particular, I was taking a look. I come from a finance background. So I spent about 10 years in banking and then another 10 years in brokerage, and I'm a financial planner. So I just wanted to switch out. I wanted to do something microfinance or something a bit more meaningful. And then I took a look at a bunch of programs, but they all seemed very academic. And then when I looked at BCIT's program, I'm not trying to sell their program, yeah. but you're asking me why I joined their program. Yeah. It's all the instructors. They're all industry. And so when you have them there, they're actually telling you what they do on a day-to-day basis. And they're setting you up with contacts, and they're giving you insight into their world. And it's great. And you know what? They're so motivated because they can see that there's more. They're breeding more of them, mm-hmm. you know. So
awesome.
They've got a captive audience.
And so the course you guys are taking with Tracy is about cooperatives and community development. Did you know much about co-ops before? Any of you? Yeah?
I think I might have been the only one that knew the history of the co-op movement before coming to this class.
Oh.
And that was literally just because I had taken this, you know, sort of left-wing social justice-y program before in CAP.
Mm.
And we'd had a guest speaker come in and talk about co-ops. So I was surprised that nobody else really knew that. And Tracy was very happy that I did.
Yeah. In the 2 years that I took business school before this program, I didn't hear the word cooperatives mentioned.
Yeah.
So I had a basic knowledge of it just from, you know, of course, MEC and REI and understanding that a credit union is member-driven, but that was it, very surface level.
And how about you, Esther or Monica? You guys have much co-op knowledge before the course?
I only knew about the existence of co-ops, but I didn't really know what they stood for and why they were better, or you know how they were different way of operating. So no.
Well, yeah, we were talking with Tracy. Like you just don't really get exposure to the co-op business model unless you are really, I don't know, coming from a co-op family or something like that. Or now you're most of the way through your course now. Tracy was saying that you probably have more knowledge than the majority of the population about co-ops now. And so what's your impression of the co-op model? I'm curious because we were talking also at the beginning that youth engagement is this issue that co-ops are facing. The University of Saskatchewan does a top co-op issues survey every year, and it ranked number 4 out of 10 of the top co-op issues. The number one being a public understanding of co-ops. That's like number one. But down there on number 4 was youth engagement. And I'm wondering, do you feel like you're engaged? Do you feel like there's light bulbs being turned on? James?
I think there's two parts to that question, right? The first was what were our opinions of co-ops? And I think everybody has a very positive outlook on the whole cooperative business model and movement in general. Especially after taking this course. We could go into that more, I'm sure, later. But in terms of the youth engagement, or just engagement of people in general, that's something that's come up a lot, even in our other classes, is how marketing is a very powerful tool, and how it is not used effectively, seemingly effectively, by co-ops, and that there's a lot of room for improvement there for a co-op to market itself, A, as a co-op, and then just all the values that surround co-ops to be put into the public eye.
Yeah, Kim.
I think that I've lived in Vancouver now for 11 years, and I've seen how different parts of the city have changed a lot in that time, and there's so much less of a community feeling.
Hmm.
And I think that we need to have more businesses that are cooperatives, even just to make people feel included and not lonely, and that this could actually be a home for them.
I guess I'd like to hear from you as well, Monica. What's your thoughts about co-ops? Because you've been taking the course now for many weeks.
Overwhelming. We get so much information on so many different types of co-ops. It's And once your mind's open to it, it's like trying to unsee something. You know, you just can't. You can't unsee it. So, yeah, right now it's a bit overwhelming. And then you're amazed that you've never heard of this business model before. I mean, I had heard of credit unions before, and, you know, you kind of thought, okay, well, this is my little community credit union. But as a business model, you can't believe that that this isn't more utilized.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I had that same reaction. I think I told this story to your class, how I got hired at a place that was the BC Institute for Cooperative Studies, not really having a clue what a co-op was. And then sometime like 6 months in, I had this light bulb turn on, and it just kind of blew my mind that, you know, people are fighting wars around the world for democracy, in the name of democracy, but we are back here living under this dictatorship rule of corporations. And somebody mentioned earlier on the power of corporations, and that being one of those things that kind of drew you towards a sustainable business leadership program. I guess we should talk about your capstone projects. I'm super curious to hear what this is all about. Now, we've got a diverse group here, but I also understand that this project, you are all in different teams. Could maybe somebody explain how this capstone project is organized?
Yeah, so everybody in the entire class is working on the same project. And I think it was Mark Giltrow, our program head's decision to divide the labor a little bit and make it, you know, easier, have people, different groups focusing on particular aspects of a project. So we are divided into four groups. There's the community team, there's a technical team, there's a curriculum/education team, and of course a business team. And actually, totally by fluke, each of us here is on one of those different teams. And so we could each speak to...
Awesome. And then, so the capstone project as a whole, it's something you work on over the course of a term or years, or how long is that?
It's a full year long course. Okay. So we do it over both terms. This is the first year Mark has tried doing it this way. And what he's envisioning is that this will be a legacy project. We're taking on a really big job. So we're the first year of it. We're going to be doing a feasibility report on how we can install a PV array for solar panels on the Sunshine Coast in case of extreme weather emergencies. So we'll do the feasibility report for it over the course of our two terms, and then the project will get carried on and hopefully actually implemented.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess I'd be very curious to hear the impact of those different components. So community, who's on the community team?
That'd be me.
So what, as part of this feasibility study, yeah, what are you doing focused on community?
So the community team is focused on probably two main things. One is we're trying to figure out what the needs of the particular community that we're focusing on are and what people will need during a natural disaster. So that's one aspect. So we're community outreach, we'll be sending out a survey hopefully soon. We recently tried to do a bit of a phone bank, some cold calling. Didn't go so great.
No.
But, you know, live and learn, right? And then the other aspect is all the social stuff. We're in charge of getting everybody that needs to be on board. So, you know, whether that's the regional district manager, what's the CEO, CAO?
Jeanette.
I always forget. Yeah, Jeanette, but what's her title?
Oh, she's the CAO, the Chief Administrative Officer of the SCRD.
I always get that confused with CEO. Anyways, getting her on board, getting the chief of the fire district on board.
So that's all the stuff under the purview of the community team.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And what about the technical side of things? Sounds like it's probably a little bit clearer, but...
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I do feel that we got a bit of a lucky break there, the people who chose the technical team, because ours is really quite defined. So our aspect, well, we all have to work together, because naturally what specs we come up with is going to be dependent upon how much the business team gives us a budget, and then how much space we have and what location it is. But basically, the technical team, what we do is we update ourselves on all the technical stuff. So
Have you become experts in the PV array? But it's
photovoltaic.
Photovoltaic. Try and say that five times real fast.
Yeah, no. I can't say we've become experts, but we've gotten up to speed very quickly.
And now, have you talked to any experts? I know we had Vancouver Renewable Energy Co-op.
Oh, have you?
On the show two
okay,
weeks ago.
Okay, VREC. Yeah. We have. Well, ironically, just before joining this course, I actually had solar panels installed.
Oh.
With VREC. So
cool.
I've been hitting them up for some free info here and there.
That's great.
But also, we have an invaluable source. We've got Joey from BCIT, and she was involved in the BCIT campus. They had their original photovoltaic installation many years ago. So, of course, everything just progresses so quickly that that's already outdated, but not the general overall model. You know, it's just all the materials just become much more efficient.
And how come you're choosing a photovoltaic array for a natural disaster? What's the reason there?
So going back a bit as to why we're doing this project is we're modeling it after a similar project that was done by the Central Florida University in Florida, and obviously. and what they've done is, or I guess going even one step back, in Florida, the shelters that they use for emergency disasters, or natural disasters, are their schools. So during a natural disaster, they've got backup generators and whatnot, which run on diesel. Now, if the entire road system is flooded or there's big breaches in, transportation networks and whatnot, you can't get more diesel. So once you run out, you are kind of hooped.
Hmm. Interesting.
And also those stores can get destroyed and that kind of thing. So the solar panels are really, once the clouds clear and all that jazz, you actually have a renewable source that's not going anywhere and that's going to stay there and constantly generate power indefinitely, really.
Well, it's interesting you chose the Sunshine Coast for this, too.
Yes.
So we have two other teams, the curriculum team and the business team. Maybe curriculum, what does that mean? I don't really. Are you teaching people about this as well?
We are focusing on the education of of students in the on the Sunshine Coast, so we are a bit separate from the other three teams who really focus on realizing this project. Whereas we are focusing on how to bring education around solar panels as well as emergency preparedness, and also on just education around sustainability and renewable sources of energy. So we are working more closely with the with School District 46, and we will be working closely with two schools from the school district. In the process of getting in touch with their principals and seeing in what way we could add this aspect of sustainability to their current curriculum.
And so would the panels be on the schools perhaps, or?
The solar panels are going to be on the community center, which is called?
The Gibson's Community Center.
Oh, okay.
The Gibson's and?
Gibson's and Area
Community
area.
Center. Yeah. So it will not be on the schools. It was a decision that we made as a group based on some technical aspects.
Okay. And then, Kim, finally, the business team. What part of the feasibility study do you focus on?
Money makes the world go round.
Okay.
We focus on possible funding sources, looking at grants, looking at different maybe loans from the local credit unions, getting donations. A big factor of what we've been researching is just the overall cost of having these solar panels installed. Once the technical team gives us the outline of what we want, we'll go to three different solar panel installers and just get some costs and some quotes from them. Also, insurance is a really huge issue with this. When you think of the potential risk of having solar panels, you live on the Sunshine Coast, you have 90-kilometer winds, you have to make sure that those solar panels are properly installed so they don't come flying off and kill someone.
And so, I know this. You're not done the feasibility study, but do you think it's feasible? Does it make sense financially?
I can't say yet. But solar renewable energy is the way of the future, and there are more and more companies in the Lower Mainland who are expanding in that direction, so I think that it will turn out to be feasible.
Cool.
I just wanted to add that this project has been done before in Florida with great success, and so we do think it's feasible, and it will be a bigger investment, that's for sure, but in the long term it will pay off. And it's the solar panels, as James mentioned earlier, they are not only useful and effective when there's an emergency, they are a useful power source as well as educational tool in during normal times.
So they'd be on all the time, essentially.
One of the things I was surprised to find out is a big holdup on getting solar panels in the Lower Mainland is local bylaws. By doing this on the Sunshine Coast, we don't as much have to worry about that because we've partnered with the SCRD who make the rules there. But if you live in Surrey, it's almost impossible to have solar panels installed on your home. There's just a holdup on having these bylaws passed because they don't see it as being important. So if you live in Surrey, contact your council person and let them know that this is important.
Interesting. James?
There's also a ton of there are a bunch of fees and permits that you have to acquire before you do a home-based solar panel installation, and those vary per region, so it can be very confusing. I think West Van, of course, maybe not of course, but West Van has the highest permitting fees, and then like Burnaby's fairly high, and then North Van's slightly different, and some you need an electrical engineer, and some you don't, some you need a structural engineer to come and look at your house. It's all kind of convoluted.
Interesting.
So there is an organization called Force of Nature, actually. They do a bunch of work around the anti-pipeline stuff, but they also have a campaign called Solarize the City, and what they're trying to do is streamline that process and remove those permits, because they can cost up to like $3,000. So you're already spending, you know, $15,000 on a, you know, solar panel installation, and then bam, it's also $3,000 on top.
It'd be nice if it was a bit cheaper, for sure, or have some incentive. Monica?
The other added incentive is these are often grid-tied, and it most likely would be. So while the sun is producing and there's no natural disaster, that energy is being fed back to BC Hydro, and whatever building that it's going on is going to be recovering some of its costs that way.
In talking to VREC, hearing about, you know, how these things eventually do pay for themselves, you know, it's usually a decade or something, right?
It's a pretty long amortization.
And so you said you were having them installed on your home?
We have had them installed on a cabin, and our amortization is crazy. But, you know, we've talked about it for the past 15 years, and we just kept holding off, and we finally said, you know, come on. Like, you've got to do it at some point. It's never going to become ideal. Ironically, our place is also in Squamish, so it's not like the sunniest capital of the local area. So it's going to take us probably a long, long time to amortize that cost.
Still, that's cool that you have that as a backup, I guess.
It was just a priority. It was just a personal priority. We've always wanted to do this. So
not hydro. Might be good up there.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk a bit more about sustainable business, because it sounded like you all kind of came to this for really ethical, value-based reasons. What are the challenges facing the sustainable business community right now? As you're getting to meet people in the industry, what are you hearing about, you know, the challenges? Like how... Yes, Kim.
A lot of it just comes down to cost and money. Shopping, it's great to shop sustainably, but you are paying a premium for that. And if people don't understand what they're paying for, they don't understand the value they're getting in shopping at these stores and making these purchases, they're just going to go to the Walmart to the Save On Foods, go for the cheapest option.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have sort of ideas where you want to take this program once you're done? James?
My, you know, dream would be to start my own company.
Yeah.
Whether that's a solar panel installation company, although there does seem to be a lot of them now, so I'm not so sure if that's a viable option anymore. But, whether it's that or a co-op, you know, now I'm really interested in co-ops, and so there's a whole new model I have to think about. Or whether it's a, you know, rooftop food-growing garden type business, you know, I'm not really sure, but that's where I want to take it. I want to get into that world of forward-thinking, sustainable business and be a part of the leading front of that.
I'm curious to see in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Monica?
Yeah, as soon as you start telling people of the program you're doing, they're like, oh, I know somebody who's in that. Mm. So, and I've had it range from, you know, solar installations to the ports to airports to some other random company. So, you know, corporate social responsibility and sustainability is this very, very, very far-reaching topic. So, you know, similar to what Esther had said earlier, she's filling her toolbox. That's kind of what I had intended on doing. You know, you won't get anywhere if you don't actually fill your toolbox. And this program is just so broad. It's got so much information on so many different aspects of sustainability.
Well, I'm really encouraged to hear that co-ops are there in your toolbox.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's wonderful. again, talking about youth engagement, it's one of those things where we're... I've been checking out co-ops for like the last 12 years here on the show, and it's an aging population. It feels that way a lot. And so to hear new young people talk about looking at the co-op model is very encouraging. One of the questions that you had for me to ask Tracy, which I didn't, but I'm going to kick back to you guys. What's your favorite co-op? Kim, do you want to go first? Put you on the spot.
Man.
And why? How about that?
I recently became a member. Okay, so this is kind of cheating. I recently became a member of the East End Food Co-op on Commercial Drive because I'm doing my project based on them, and I was awesome. Like, well, I should be a member if I'm going to do this. I would say they're my favorite. It's great that they're local. I also live in East Vancouver, so having a local shop to go to. And so many grocery stores in the city are just Jimmy Pattison grocery stores because he owns everything.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to shop at a place that he doesn't own.
I love the East End Food Co-op. And you go in there, I keep running into people there. Go figure. But it's a wonderful little spot. How about you, Esther?
Well, I don't know if I can answer this question yet. Could I maybe say what I really love about co-ops?
Yeah.
Okay, so what really moves me when it comes to co-ops is that they are providing a space for people to be their better selves. So the co-ops and the co-op business model is not first and foremost about profit. It's more about the community and its effects on the community. So I feel like it's great to have spaces where you can really be conscious of that, because when you're in the corporate world, when you're getting a great paycheck, all kinds of benefits, and it's easy to get blindfolded. And I love that they represent and encourage a better side of us.
That's awesome.
But I really love Co-op Radio. I have a few shows that I really I have only listened to Trash Talk, Talking
yeah.
Trash. Sorry, and there's another one, but I can't remember.
Each for All, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Sorry.
How about you, Monica?
I was going to say Soul Foods. I recently heard about them, but they're not a co-op.
No.
And, you know, the founder had actually said, you know, we would be a workers' co-op, but there's nothing to share. There's, yeah. like, no co-op. There's no profits, really, for it to be distributed
but
amongst the workers.
They're definitely the social economy.
It's a really cool story.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And how about you, James?
I'm torn. between MEC and Van City.
Oh.
MEC is, unfortunately,
the big players.
The big players, absolutely. largely because I'm a member of them and have been for a while. I love skiing and outdoor stuff, so I like just being in Mountain Equipment Co-op. I like just going there and looking at ice axes, even though I'm not an ice climber. I don't know why.
Well, now that you're a cooperative expert, you should run for the board.
Maybe. Hey, there's an idea. Yeah, I should.
Planting seeds. we're going to have to wrap it up there because we're coming to the 57-minute mark. And as we said, Y57 was before us. It's called Y57 because they're 57 minutes of youth. But this has been 57 minutes of cooperation here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. I wanted to thank my guests tonight, Kim and Esther and Monica and James here in the studio with me. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing your stories tonight.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Special thanks to Tracy Cleish for bringing back her class again this year. And it's just been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have Tracy in here on the radio. We're going to leave you tonight with a little broken social scene with Cause Equals Time. Our guests next week are Heather Pritchard, Vanessa Hammond, and Chris Nichols for our co-op check-ins. We'll be checking in with the agricultural co-op sector, with the health co-op sector, and with the worker co-op sector next week here on Each For All. Our website is eachforall.coop. You can email us at ideas@eachforall.coop, and of course, tweet us at Each For All on the Twitter sphere. Thanks so much for joining us tonight here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. This is your radio station. Have a cooperative evening.